Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Wednesday, July 31st, the post-trade deadline edition. I'm Lindsey Crosby, national MLB writer for Athlon Sports. He's Christian Rau, managing editor of InsideTheCardinals.com. We're both exhausted from the trade deadline, but what a day of trades, Christian.
Man, what a day, what a weekend of trades. But really yesterday, I can't think of a more intense trade deadline, at least for the last couple of years. There was people thinking this was going to be the most dead trade deadline. It was the complete opposite. I think Passan said it the complete right way, the way he ended it, because you could tell he was exhausted too. He wrote it with just, there were a lot of trades today. Yeah, no kidding, Jeff. No kidding.
Yeah, that was I had to charge my phone halfway through the day. That was wild. We're not going to talk too much about the games from yesterday on today's show.
I can't wait to get back to the games, though. Love trade deadline, but I can't wait to get back to the games.
Jazz Chisholm went off again. But no, we're going to talk about these trades. Winners, losers, the snoozers, the teams that didn't really do a whole lot. And then our trademark quick pitch section at the very end. So starting off, winners of the trade deadline. Looking at the buyers first, Christian, I'm going to go with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And one, because they solved a lot of their problems at this trade deadline, which, side note, can you imagine spending $1.7 billion in free agency and still having holes at the trade deadline? But no, so they get a bunch of deals. They get Tommy Edman, who can play shortstop, who can play second base, who can cover center field. They don't have to have him do center field, though, because they get Kevin Kiermaier to come in. He's planning to retire after the season. He gets to ride into the sunset, potentially with a ring, depending on how this goes. They get Amed Rosario for the second straight offseason. He can play third. He can play short. He can play second. You can throw him into a corner outfield spot. You probably could try to throw him into a center field as well if you need to. But again, you've got lots of guys there. And then they swoop in at the very end of the, like right before the deadline, and they get the best starter that ended up being moved in Jack Flaherty from the Tigers. And we got some reporting last night. The Yankees had a deal in place and balked because of the medicals. We don't quite know exactly what the details are there, but the Dodgers swoop in and in a crazy market, get a somewhat decent price on this. They give up Theron Loranzo, the catcher who had come all the way up into the top five in the organization. I know he was number 8 on MLB Pipeline. I believe Baseball America had him like third in the system in their midseason re-rates. And then infielder Trey Sweeney, who I believe they acquired in a different deal not too long ago. And so they move him on because they've got more promising middle infielders than him. So I've got the Dodgers as my big winner simply because just about every single hole, postseason starter, shortstop, center field, they have capably filled that hole. And the offense is good enough with Mookie Betts coming back, Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman coming back soon, that you don't really have to find a guy who can do everything if you're the Dodgers. You just have to find a guy who can field the position.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think the Dodgers had probably the best trade deadline, especially what they did at the end. I didn't know that about Jack Flaherty. I must have missed that. Must have been finally sleeping. That must have been when I finally got to sleep.
It was late last night. I don't love somebody leaking the medicals here. Like that's not great to me. I don't know if that was on the Yankee side, somebody trying to reassure the fans that like, hey, we were trying and we thought we were going to do something. I don't love the idea that they got leaked, but we do know that that deal was in place. You don't get the medicals as an MLB team until the framework of the deal is in place. So it's not like everybody can be there
for missing out on Flaherty. I think they had a good deadline still too with their relief that they added, Jazz Chisholm. The one thing that I will say, I think the Dodgers are the winner, but I'm going to go a little home run here too. I think the St. Louis Cardinals had a great trade deadline. I think what they did now, I think they added the right pieces they got and they hardly moved anything. Tommy Edman did go to the Dodgers, sure, and he's a fantastic player, but they weren't expecting him to really have too much of a production this year. Mm-hmm. Negative run differential heading into the All-Star break. They go ahead and get an outfielder in Tommy Pham, who hits grand slams apparently in his first at-bats pitch hits. Eric Fetty needed an extra pitcher.
And with control for next season too.
Right. Yeah, and they get a relief pitcher from Armstrong moving Dylan Carlson, which he was the odd man out in the 26-man roster. So I think what they added was really impressive. But I will have to, I have grief. I think the Dodgers are the winner of the deadline.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought too much about the Cardinals and kind of what they did, but that's definitely a legitimate, like, yeah, no, they quietly, I love the Fetty pickup because he has control for next season as well. And we've talked already on the show about how old some of these Cardinals pitchers are and getting the dude who can post, who can give you quality innings. I mean, he had a great WAR and a winning record with the White Sox, right? He could be your number two starter in the postseason.
Yeah.
You know, again, assuming you get there. Winners for the sellers. For me, it's the Miami Marlins. I mean,
there's no doubt.
They brought in, I think I saw at the end of the day, they brought in 15 prospects, with the majority of them being position players, which makes sense when you think about the top three prospects in this system for the Miami Marlins were pitchers. You had Max Meyer, who was just called up the other day to come back to the rotation. You have Noble Meyer, no relation, Thomas White, two former prep draftees who were in their first full season in baseball. So they go and they get a lot of position players. They get infielders, they get outfielders, they get guys who are close to the majors, like Kyle Stowers. They get guys who are development projects still. They get guys with great power. Devinson De Los Santos is a great example of that. But they get a catcher from the Yankees. They get a corner infield slugger. They get defenders. They really did. If you're going to tear down a team, that is the way to tear down a team, because there's just so many, not lottery tickets now. A lot of these guys feel like they're at least going to make the majors. I don't know if they're going to be impact players. Devinson De Los Santos has a bad strikeout rate, but like, they're going to make the majors, right? You're going to see these guys in the bigs. The question is going to be, can player development make them into a little bit more than they are right now? That's going to be the big question here, but
yeah, like when it. The updated power or updated prospect rankings and updated farm system rankings come out, I think the biggest jump we're going to see in quite some time, in a few years probably, is Miami moving up from the bottom, usually like the bottom three teams in the league. And I see them going into the top half. That's how good I think we see the Marlins jump up of how much they added in prospect, just depth. I really love the Connor Norby piece. I think he's going to be a huge asset. I'm really excited for this. What Peter Bendix did, and I can't believe we've been saying this. We've been giving Peter Bendix so much criticism after the Luis Arraez trade, and he comes into this weekend. He puts his shades on, man, and he just took care of business.
He cooks.
He took care of business. Yeah, absolute masterclass by Peter Bendix. The Miami Marlins are in such a better situation than they were a week ago. Yes, they moved a lot of players, but they're actually going to be a fun team to cover the second half. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way to look at some of these deals is the other fans were mad about the prospects that went away. The Orioles getting Trevor Rogers for Connor Norby and Kyle Stowers. Like, Orioles fans were not happy about that. And it's like, okay, you're going to replace Connor Norby at the major league level with Jackson Holliday. Chill a little bit. But
yeah, Michael Elias finally did it. He finally pulled the trigger. He had to do it eventually. So yeah, it finally happened now.
And even then, like, they still have a really good farm system. Like, they didn't give a lot of stuff away. Sticking kind of with the Marlins here as we go to the losers of the trade deadline here. For the buyers, I've got the San Diego Padres because of the deal they made with the Marlins, right? If you look at this, they get Tanner Scott, best closer on the market, right? They add in Brian Hoeing, a middle reliever from Miami. But what they gave up, right? Robbie Snelling, Adam Mazur, who has made major league starts this year, infielder Graham Pauly, infielder Jay Beshears, all four of them were in the top 30 for San Diego. But Snelling, Mazur, and Pauly were in the top five. And this is after they had already traded another top position player, or top pitching prospect, the other day. To get Jason Adam from the Rays, they sent out Dylan Lesko, who has not come back from his pre-Tommy John form, but still a very promising player. Homer Bush, and then JD Gonzalez. Like, they've given up a lot for some relievers. Scott's a rental. They have Jason Adam through next year, but like, Scott's a rental. And it just feels like a lot to give up to come in either second or third in the West, right?
Right. No, that's really true. I will say they moved a lot of things in their farm for just bullpen help. Now, we know that in the postseason and getting to the postseason, bullpen help is absolutely crucial. But when you're in a division with the Diamondbacks, with the Dodgers right now, I think you have to move the needle a little bit more. We don't know what's going on with Yu Darvish. There's injuries to Joe Musgrove. Mm-hmm. They didn't address their starting pitching rotation at all. So I think that I would agree with you that they are the losers of this deadline. At first, when we were writing this list out, I had them in my short list as winners because of how scary this bullpen looks. But when you dig deeper, you got to put them down with you now just because of the prospects.
They did get Martin Perez from the Pirates as a starter.
But that doesn't move the needle to me,
though. I was about to say, he has a 5.20 ERA this season. I think he could be a little bit better on a better team. He had a 2022, he was an all-star with an ERA under 3, but yeah, it doesn't move the needle, and I still don't think it fixes that starting pitching issue. If you go to the postseason and you don't have Yu Darvish, which we don't know why Yu Darvish is out. He's on the restricted list. It's a family matter or something.
Right.
Dylan Cease, and then there's questions about who's your 2 and 3, right? Yeah. I assume you're going to see Matt Waldron, the knuckleballer, somewhere in there, but like, you have questions after Dylan Cease in the rotation. And so to have your best starter be Martin Perez is a little bit of a question there. Who else do you have as a loser from the buyers in this?
I'm going to stick with the Padres with you on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the Padres, like I said, once you finally dug deep with it, I think that the Padres get the notch for this one.
Okay.
And I think we're in agreement with the loser of this one too. I don't think we have too much parity right now.
Yeah, I have the White Sox as the selling loser in this trade deadline. And I think it's simply because I don't love the returns they got on some of these things, right? They moved out a lot of guys, not as many as Miami did. They moved out a lot of guys, but I really don't see anybody that they got back being a difference maker. The best player that came back is probably Miguel Vargas, who's a second baseman.
It took them two of those players to move to get Vargas. They moved Kopech and Fetty.
That's right. And it's just, it doesn't make, like, you moved out Eloy Jimenez. I know that some of that was financial in nature, right? You want to get out from under that contract, but he's in the final guaranteed year of the deal. He's got team options for 25 and 26. You got back, Trey Magoe, a left-handed pitching prospect who I don't even think is rated in the Orioles top 30. It just felt like a lot of these moves. You sent Tanner Banks out. You got a middle infield prospect. I was outside of the top 10 for Philly. And honestly, that's not a great farm system. I don't really, you gave up a lefty reliever with, 2028. So 4 more years of control for a mid-teens, middle infield prospect that doesn't hit for a lot of power. Like, it just, the returns weren't great. You gave away Paul DeJong to the Royals. A walk across the field to the other dugout trade. I love these trades. But you traded him away for a right-handed pitching prospect that, again, was not rated in the Royals system. They moved some good guys. They moved a top 10 pitching prospect in Mason Barnett to the Oakland A's to get Lucas Urquiag. Anyway, but you did not get the impact in that deal, and it just, or in any of these deals, really. And that's, to me, that's a place you really couldn't be because of how historically bad that team was this year.
Right. And I don't see them getting historically better anytime soon because of what they've done at this deadline, what is planning for the future, unless they are looking to just completely, get rid of a lot of money on the board so they can be aggressive in free agency. But we know that's not going to happen. Not right now with the way this team looks. Yes, their hands were tied with Crochet because of what his comments were. Let's agree with that. Okay. Let's maybe not go ahead and give them the nod or the blame for that one. But they didn't move Luis Robert Jr. either. If you're going to move other players and go ahead and make this full rebuild, why don't get your biggest piece, who clearly wants out of Chicago, Lindsay?
Mm-hmm.
And now he's stuck on that team. You know very well that we're going to see some videos. We're going to see some videos, pictures, whatever you name it, probably some comments in the post from Robert about him showing and being clearly straightforward about being unhappy with that organization. There's already some rumors about fractions with the manager, with the way that he's been, you know, dealing with his players and the way that they've talked about how it's the only the players' faults if they have the worst MLB season. Don't quote me, but it was like around those paraphrasing there. I'll tell you what, if the White Sox don't fix this in the winter meetings and fix it in the offseason, we're going down a stretch for the next, I'd say, 2 or 3 years where the White Sox are going to be at the complete bottom of this AL Central. It doesn't seem like it seems like it's going to be really tough to fix where they're at right now.
Here's the worst part about this for the White Sox. They lost 101 games last year and they weren't trying to tank yet, right? Number 5 overall pick, that's fine. They are much worse than that this year. They could finish well over 100 losses. They can't pick any higher than 10th because they receive because of the revenue sharing rules behind consecutive lottery picks and things like that. So they're going to be historically bad. They can't even get the number 1 overall pick. And it's just they have not yet capitalized on how bad this team is and the assets that they had. And I think that's kind of your big thing there. Moving on to the snoozers real quick. I do believe we have different teams for our snoozers. These are teams that weren't very active. They made a couple deals here and there, but not a lot. Every MLB team made a deal this year, which is not the way it always is. We've seen teams sit out in previous years. Every team made a deal. My winner from the teams that weren't very active is the Atlanta Braves. Because when you look at what the Atlanta Braves did, they got Jorge Soler. They got Luke Jackson as a throw into that deal. And everybody kind of talked about Soler coming over, that it was just vibes. You wanted to get back the vibes from 2021 and things like that.
Yeah.
But I think he legitimately has some benefit to you at your leadoff position. They've said as of Wednesday, he got in Milwaukee last night. He's going to be active and on the roster today. But outside of Ronald Acuña Jr., who had an on-base of .351 this year, even though he wasn't at MVP level production, everybody else who is led off for Atlanta has an on-base of .280 or lower, right? Jorge Soler, his season turned around in the start of June. As a leadoff hitter, has an on-base of .380. He hits for power as well. And power from the leadoff spot, walks, getting on base, that is kind of what powered this offense last year, is first inning runs because your leadoff guy got on and somebody drove him in. And Alex Anthopoulos talked about this wasn't just a spur of the moment or vibes. We talked to him last night after the trade deadline, and he said they tried to trade for him in 2022. They had conversations in the 23. They had conversations going into 23 with the Marlins about trading for him and couldn't quite get it done. But I like that they didn't give away anything really valuable. They gave away Tyler Matzek, who is on the 60-day IL, hasn't pitched since the start of the season. And they gave away third base prospect Sabin Ceballos, who is in the back half of their top 30, doesn't have the defensive range for short, doesn't have the power for third base. Didn't really give much away. And now you have a guy with control for the next 2 seasons as well. You have a succession plan at DH. You have an extra outfield option because they've dealt with injuries and had to get bats every year. I really like the fact that they didn't jump into the deep end of this starter pool and give away a bunch of prospects they're going to need for a rental arm.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the Braves, where they're sitting right now, eight and a half games back from Philly, they're still trying to get into the wild card race. You think they were going to do a little bit more, especially what was going on with that pitching. But hey, you got to figure out what's going on with the money wise. They found a way to get under the luxury tax. I guess that's good enough, right? So
under the third tier, yeah. So no draft pick penalties. They're still in the luxury tax and paying for a second consecutive year. They're not in the third tier where you get draft pick penalties.
That was and because of that, they're probably going to get the best prep pitcher in the draft next year because that's what they do, right? So it's probably going to be a huge win for them getting down to that.
Yeah.
For me, I got the Milwaukee Brewers. I think you're leading the National League Central and you snooze on the trade deadline. All you go ahead and get is Frankie Montas and you trade. Now, he's not on the active roster, but you trade an outfielder in Joey Weimer, who is outfield depth. And oh, by the way, Christian Yelich, we don't know what's going to go happen with him because of his injuries right now. He's going to forego back surgery until the offseason, but that means that he's not going to be 100% for the rest of the season, Lindsay. So Frankie Montas going to the Milwaukee Brewers, a 7.71 ERA in the month of July. I don't think that's enough for the Brewers to possibly hold on to this National League Central. And I know they have a few games up on the rest of the league, but the National League is log jammed. Let's be honest. They are log jammed, especially with this wild card race. If you're not going to make the moves to move forward, and especially with the injuries and the question marks that they've had with their pitching rotation, that's been pretty quiet. I have to go ahead and call them snoozers. Now, a lot of people thought this team was going to be at the bottom of the NL Central this year with the trades of Corbin Burns, with the injuries of Devin Williams. They have surprised people. Pat Murphy has done a great job in his first year as the Brewers manager, but I just don't think that was enough. Not this year.
Yeah. I totally see kind of that concern. And that's something I do like that they went out and got a starter. I mean, they've used so many starting pitchers this year because of injuries and things like that. So I do like that they went out and got a starter, but I think you're right that the question is going to be, is it enough? But I do also like the fact that they didn't sell the farm to go out and try to get some sort of big impact bat, because as a team with historically a little bit lower revenues and less participation in free agency, they need those prospects. So I like that. Losers of the trade deadline, as far as the snoozers, teams that didn't do enough, I think it's the Los Angeles Angels for me. And I think you feel the same way.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, something where the Carlos Estevez deal was, to me, the best return. They got two starting pitching prospects, George Klaassen, Samuel Aldegiri. Not highly rated in a lot of places, but as the updated lists come out, these were breakout years for these guys. But outside of that, none of the returns really are that impactful. And then they didn't deal some guys we thought were going to go. Tyler Anderson, who, because of a stuff perspective, wasn't as in demand as we thought he would, but still no reason not to trade him. Taylor Ward, Luis Rengifo, couple guys they could have moved that they didn't. Just feels like they didn't really do enough to get better, and you know, in the future. And they kept some guys that are going to walk in free agency that are not good enough to get a qualifying offer, so you don't get anything for them. I'd almost rather pull a White Sox and get something over letting these guys walk for nothing.
Yeah, we're at the same spot we were last year at the Angels, right? A lot of people were questioning, why didn't they move Ohtani at the deadline to get at least something? Now, I know that there's other things with the draft and that aspect. So, I mean, different story. You could have a whole episode on that. So we aren't going to go that far into that one. But the momentum with the Phillies trade and the Angels was so high because, as you mentioned, the return was pretty good for the Phillies. And a lot of people are mentioning, saying that Dave Dombrowski of the Phillies had one of the biggest packages to go and get a reliever. People were making the argument that the trade for Estevez was better than, or was higher than, the one for Tanner Scott of the Padres. I'm not making that argument, but some people are. I think the Angels really needed to make more moves. They are right there with the White Sox. They're just standing still. I feel bad for Mike Trout. He's the biggest loser of this entire trade deadline, this entire season. I know with injuries, I think we've talked about that. He just needs to find a better scenery, but
they also announced last night he had a setback in his rehab, and it's now questionable whether he even plays at all the rest of this year. So he may not make it back before the season's over. He had a setback in his rehab.
Even more, Lindsay, why they should have added more prospects, more capital for 2025 and beyond.
Yeah. Okay. A few minutes left in the show. We're going to do our quick pitch segment, the rapid fire here. Most impactful MLB player traded at the deadline. I've got Jack Flaherty going to the Dodgers. I think he's going to start game two of the postseason. Go.
I got two. It's a package deal. I'm going to call the Dodgers shortstops in this case. Amed Rosario, Tommy Edman. Because of that, it moves. It can move Mookie Betts to the outfield. It could be a huge asset.
Okay. Most impactful prospect traded. Who is the best guy who is a minor leaguer who is going somewhere else? I've got, to me, it's going to end up being a Marlins return here, right? You look at what they did, Augustin Ramirez, the catcher. The Marlins have not had a good catcher since JT Realmuto. I think he can be, if he can stick behind the plate, I think he can be the next major league, at least above average catcher that they've had.
Love what the Marlins did. I agree with you, but I'm going to take Connor Norby of the Marlins. I think he is going to be absolutely a stud. And once he finally gets everyday at bats, which he will very soon with the Marlins, you're going to like it too.
All right. Deal that the buyer will regret. What is the deal of a guy you went to acquire that you think is not going to go well? Go.
This is a tough one, but I'm going to go ahead and go with that Rays and Cubs deal. I think Isaac Paredes, with the way that his poll goes, I'm going with the Chicago Cubs. I think they might regret moving Chris Morel that early and Hunter Biggie. I think the Hunter Biggie thing is still a big deal.
Gosh darn it, that's the same deal I had, right? That's the same deal I had. Like, it's not the best profile for Paredes being super pull happy. He likes to do a lot of shots down the line. You get an extra 30-something feet of distance there, plus the winds and everything. It's not the worst ballpark he could have gone to. That would have been Baltimore, but it's the second worst. How about a deal that the seller will regret? We talked about this, I think, yesterday. I'm going to go with the Houston Astros. I feel like what they gave up to get Yusei Kikuchi, I think Kikuchi's good. Don't get me wrong. I like Yusei Kikuchi. I just think Jake Bloss would have been in the rotation for a few years. I think Will Wagner was a shoe-in to take over at third base once Alex Bregman walked in free agency. And Lo Perfetto is a useful fourth outfielder who has some first base flexibility, which first base has been a problem for them. So I think that deal is going to come back to bite them in future seasons.
With the Astros concerns, the pitching staff, I mean, I'm with you. There's a possibility also that Kikuchi could be the Lance Lynn of last year's trade deadline and fall too. So I think there is a possibility that he is going to be a big regret. But I'm going to go with Trevor Rogers of the Orioles. I think that trade, big question marks in my mind. I don't know why you go for that. Orioles must see something that they can fix in him, but he has an over 4.3 ERA on his career. We didn't really see much impressive things from him with the Marlins this season. So I'm going to go ahead and say Trevor Rogers.
Got it. Okay. Player in the best situation going forward. I've got Tommy Edman. He's not an offensive force, but it feels like he's on a really good roster. He's going to be able to give you clutch hits. Like we said, he can play anywhere on the field, and he's definitely an upgrade over Chris Taylor, over Kike Hernandez, and he's probably your primary utility guy on that roster now, who could play almost every day at like four different positions. I think that based on the player quality, he's best going to outperform what you expect from him down the stretch, provided that he's healthy. There's a little bit of question there about the health of his ankle, but provided that he's healthy, I think he's in the best situation to succeed going forward.
Breaking my heart, putting Tommy two bags in the blue and putting him to the Dodgers. Break my heart, Lindsay, but I agree, he's going to be great. I'm going to go with Jazz Chisholm Jr. And I think this is what he's done with the Yankees. Leading off for the Marlins, he didn't have any help around him. Now you can put him in 1 through 9 in any spot this lineup it shows, and you can put him in different positions. He shined at third base the other day. Who would have thought? Jazz Chisholm is going to shine with the New York media, with the New York spotlights, anything you put in front of him, and he's got protection. He's going to be the protection around Aaron Judge, Juan Soto. Jazz Chisholm, I think, is going to be the best situation for 2024 and beyond when we look back at this trade deadline.
Yeah, I saw something on Twitter, I think it was last night, about the number of home runs he's had in his first couple games with the new team. And he has like the record for most home runs in his first 3 games with a new team after a trade or something like that. It's really good situation there. Player in the worst situation, I'm going to kind of cheat a little bit because he's a major leaguer. Miguel Vargas going to the White Sox. It's his strengths. He's not a power hitter, right? He's been miscast as a left fielder because they tried to find a way to get him onto the field there for the Dodgers for a while, but he's really a second baseman at heart. And he's not on a good team. He's not really above average defensively. His thing is plate discipline and decent, good hitting ability. He doesn't have any protection there. He's easy to get attacked. I don't love the fit. If you don't want me to cheat and kind of go with a guy who's on a contender, Justin Turner to the Mariners feels like it's a tough fit because you still didn't fix the problem on that team of they don't hit for enough power and they strike out way too much. And adding Justin Turner doesn't fix things for the rest of that roster. And so he's just now on a team that's going to strike out a lot around him. You're going to see a lot of games where he gets on base and the inning ends with him still standing on first base.
I like both those, but I'm going to double down. I think Isaac Paredes for going to the Cubs is still the worst situation for me with that trade. I used two of them in rapid fire at the same trade, but it's hard not to go ahead and look at that profile, look at him moving to Wrigley Field and having a lot of concerns.
Yeah. Another great episode of First Pitch. Do us a favor if you're watching, like the video, subscribe to us on YouTube. If you're on your favorite audio app, give us a 5-star review. Those things always do well. Things to watch for on July 30th. The MLB draft signing deadline is this afternoon. You have to have your picks in and signed. The contract's finalized by this afternoon. There's going to be some interesting guys who don't get signed and what that does to the draft pools. And then games, Yankees at Phillies in the series finale, 12:35 p.m. Eastern. Nestor Cortez versus Christopher Sanchez. Really going to be interesting to see what happens there. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.